Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Ayin Vav and Aleph on the second line. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Nikav v'nistam. So if he has a puncture in the reproductive system here on the member, koshi ilu nikrei v'nikra pasul v'imav kashir. So now what happened was he has a puncture, he has a hole here, which would render him problematic, because he won't be able to reproduce, and it's a hole that, as we saw before, is one of the problems with regards to Tzuadaka and Krut Shavcha. But nevertheless, it then sealed up. So the hole sealed up, so you would think that everything should be fine. Where it says you still have to test how efficacious the seal is. So how do we test it is Nikrei V'Nikra. We have to have a case where there's pressure from the semen in there, and to see if it withstands the pressure. Now, whether that means simply an erection, to test whether that pressure allows the stima to hold water to stay there, or the way that Rashi says it, is that you have to wait for the area to fill with semen and see if that withstands the pressure of its filling. So if it does withstand the pressure, then it's kasher. Obviously, if it doesn't withstand the pressure, then it is pasul. Haviba Rava. So Rava says, Hecha. Rava asked the question, or posed this question, what is the situation exactly over here? Ilei melamato mi'atara. If you say it is below the atara, which again is the end of the member, the part where it declines towards the tip, afilu nichrat nami. You don't even have to have that. I mean, if that was completely sliced off, it would still be kasher. He's not a krut shofcha. So what's the problem if there's a puncture? That's even less of an issue than being totally cut off. Ela be'atara atzma. The answer of the Gemara is very interesting at the atara itself. What's the atara itself here? That's a difficult question because the atara, as we know it, is from the point where the member begins to decline towards the tip. That's all called the atara. We just said now that if that is cut off, then it's not even a problem. As long as there's a koshu left, so then what does he mean atara atzma? The atara atzma must mean that borderline. Exactly the point where it begins to decline towards the tip, that's where it was. That's where this puncture was. That's where this hole was. So it's right on that edge of the end of the member and the beginning of the atara. Itmar nami. So we have a similar statement. Amar Rav Mari bar mar. Amar marukva. Amar shmuel. Nikev batara atzma. Benistam. If the puncture was in the atara itself, on that line, between the end of the member and the beginning of the atara, v'nistam, and then it's sealed up, kosh ilu nikrei v'nikra, and as long as, if there's pressure in that area, it doesn't hold up, then pasul, v'imlav, but if it does hold up, then it is kasher. Now, shalach le rova braid the rabo, the Rav Yosef. So this is rova, the son of rabo, sending it to Rav Yosef, who was his father's peer. Yilam deinu rabbeinu, heche abdinan. How do you do this? So the main issue is, how do you check whether it can withstand the pressure, either the erection or the pressure of the carry? You have to somehow stimulate the area in order for it to produce the semen and to test the pressure, test the efficacy of this seal. So I'm really, matinan nama chamima desare. You bring a hot loaf of bread, of barley bread, and you stick it by his rectum, umikre, and that causes him to either have an erection or causes him to release semen. And we see, that's how we can test it out, that we can see if it works. And I think this is actually one of the times that it is actually medically efficacious. It does cause, there's some correlation. I have some recollection. I think because in QV7, in the Holocaust, they talk about a case like this. They used it in the medical testing to simulate whatever is being spoken about in the Gemara here. So I think there was a way to do it. Amar Abaye, ate kule alma Yaakov Avinu Avai? So Abaye says, wait, is everybody like Yaakov Avinu? Dichtiv bei kochi v'reshit oni? When he speaks about Ruvain, he says, you are my strength, the first of my oni, and as Rashi describes over here, literally that he had not seen keri miyamav, he never had any seminal discharge This was his first child, first everything, first time he ever had any discharge. I mean, he's not a young man at that time. He's already in his 70s. Lo ra keri mi yamav. What Abai is saying over here, if this person is so holy and so exemplary that he never had any seminal emissions and no discharges, so you have to do this crazy way to get him to discharge, Elam Abai, Mavrina Kameh Big Day Tzivonim. You take colored clothing of women, which he believes would have been stimulating to him, and that would suffice. So Amarova, Ata Kuliyama Barzilai Agiladihu, is everybody like Barzilai Agiladi, which the Gemara is making a veiled reference to a Gemara in Shabbat, which discusses Barzilai Agiladi. When David HaMelech comes back to Yerushalayim after Merit of Shalom, that he's greeted by Barzilai Agiladi, and David wants to reward him for his loyalty during the rebellion. So he tells him that you come and join and you'll eat on my table forever. You will be Ochlei Shulchani. You'll be one of those that always is at my table. And Barzilai Agiladi says, for an old man like me, it's not so meaningful. I'm where I can barely taste food at this time. Whereas maybe for my kids, it'd be something more meaningful. So the Gemara there makes a statement about Barzilai Agiladi. He says, Shituf Bezima Haya. It was someone that was involved in Zima. Lefikach kavtza alav zikna. Therefore, he became old faster. Dai amta davya bei rabbi. Because there was this maidservant in the house of rabbi. Batzadi v'tarzin shnei, 92 years old, v'tama kidra. And she was able to taste the food, and she was cooking away. So, there's no reason he should have lost his taste buds. There's no reason that he should have lost his senses. So the Gemara correlates the loss of senses with zima or znut or being involved in relations way too much, that caused Barzilai Agiladi to age much faster. So that's the Gemara's veiled reference to Barzilai Agiladi. But Rova's point is, what, that every person who sees colored clothing of a woman all of a sudden is going to feel themselves to be excited by it, implying that Barzilai Agiladi was way too involved in this stuff and that he was easily excited, and that's not going to work by everybody else. We have to say, like Rabbi Yosef suggested originally, that we use this methodology in order to generate the seminal flow, in order to test whether this hole is actually sealed, and to know whether the person is considered to be a tzodakah kruchavka, or he's still healthy. Nikav pasul mipnei shu shotet. The problem with the puncture is that it drips out, meaning that it doesn't allow for the discharge of whether it's the urine or the semen in such a way that it comes out as a flow or as with pressure, because the hole causes it to drip out or to be released in the way that you don't want. Nistam, if it's sealed up, kasher, then it's fine, mipnei shehu molid, because that allows him to procreate. Again, we saw this yesterday, again, that this is an important component of the shame of krut shofcha and tzodakah, is that the ability to procreate, that the two are correlated, that the fact that you're tzodakah or the person is declared a tzodakah krut shofcha also involves the inability to procreate. Over here he says, if it seals up and you're able to procreate, that's already evidence of the fact that you're not a tzodakah krut shofcha. V'zehu pasul shechuzer lehechshero. This is a type of soul that can be rectified, that can be healed. I mean, it's not permanent. It's something that happens, but can be rectified. Zeo lemute mai. What does this come to exclude? Lemute krum shala machmat makabirea. So it comes to exclude a case where there's some sort of healing on the lungs of an animal. This is the problem of glat on the lungs. The Gemara talks about sritut. Talks about lesions on the lungs, injuries to the lungs that are then healed, but they don't heal properly. They really scar instead of healing. And so those lesions, and they might cause adhesions as well by the injury that's done to the lungs, they are scar tissue that does not really seal. It just builds up on there. And that's a problem because that remains a problem of trefa. And so too over here. If such a seal builds up on the individual, then that seal is not considered to be really a nistam, but rather it's just considered to be a cover, but it's not going to function in a way that really seals the hole. It just causes some sort of membrane to come over it, but that's not going to protect it. Thinner cover covers the hole, but it's not going to stand up to the test of time. It's not really considered to be a healing of that area. It's anal chrome, because that's not considered to be a healing of the area. It's not considered to be, chrome usually means a membrane, but it's not considered to be a full sealing of the skin, but rather just a scar tissue building up and not causing a healing or a sealing of the area of the hole. Now they said to Abai, say, how do you solve this problem? How do you heal this area? So he says, Maitinan sa'arta, you bring a barley kernel, umisartinan lay, and then you take the sharp end of the barley kernel, and you cut the area. You cause lesions around this hole. Umaitinan tarba, and then you bring fat, vishafinan, and you rub it in that area. So now what you've done, number one, is you caused the lesions that you caused with the barley kernel forces it to start to coagulate and heal. Number two, you put fat on top of it to create both a seal as well as a cover to that area so that it'll heal. Umaitinan shumshana gamlo, you bring, this is the more difficult part of this, a large ant. Umenechachtinan le, you have him bite the area. And then you pop its head off in order to leave it sealed. So the idea being that when you, this is equivalent to modern day of a butterfly bandage, which causes tension to pull the area together so that when it heals, it seals in the heel. Because otherwise sometimes the cut is too deep. If you don't get stitches, then the cut's too wide and it doesn't seal. It keeps opening up. And there they didn't have the ability to stitch or to use a butterfly bandage. This is the equivalent, which is that they have the ant bite, so it pulls that area together and holds it sealed. So then they pop the head off, they leave the head attached there, so that it acts as like a clamp to keep the area together so that it heals together or sealed up. So it is a very primitive method. It works, meaning that the idea or the concept of creating a clamp there is something that makes sense. Obviously, the methodology may not be so hygienic, but the idea is understood. But davka sa'arto, but sir, it has to be a barley seed that you do with it. Aval parzala mizrazarif, but you can't use metal. In order to create the cuts up front that force the healing, you must use the barley seed, which doesn't rip or tear in that way, because that allows for the healing. If you use metal, the metal cause is cutting that is sharp and separating in a sense, that stripping is problematic because it doesn't heal as well. It actually will cause more damage than allow for the healing. Vahane mile the katan. That's true by a minor. Avagadol mikpule mikpal. But by a adult, there's a problem. Achashala ruka chuzer v'niklaf v'nistar. Rashi says the healing works in a youngster, because we know that young people are able to heal much faster and better. But he says if you already use someone who is an adult, even though you do all of this methodology, it will not in the end work because it still will fall apart. It still basically folds on top or seals on top and then will keep falling away. Instead of actually healing down to the core like it would with a katan, by a gadol it seems to sit on top the healing. And it will be like a scab that falls away and doesn't really close up the area. Others suggest that the difference here between gadol and katan is not in age, but in the size of the hole. If the hole is small enough, then we're able to have it seal up properly. Gadol is that it's just too big and we can't get it to seal. So no matter how it heals, it will always open up again because of the size of the hole. Amar Rabba Baravuna, Amatil Mayim Mishtei Mikomot. Someone, they urinate, it exits from two places. Pasul, that is clearly problematic because there is now what we call a hole somewhere along the way. So now, Amarova, leitilchot aloke bra, aloke abo. The halacha is not like the son and not like the father. The son being Rabba bar Ravuna, the father being like Ravuna. Bra hadamran, the son, which is Rabba Ravuna, here the halacha is not like him. Abba, the halacha is not like Ravuna in this case. The Amar Ravuna, Nashima misololot, zo bezo, psulot lekehuna. Women that are interacting with each other are psulot lekehuna. So I'll come back, let's discuss what that means in a second. Rafilo Rabbi Elazar, even according to Rabbi Elazar, Damar, who we saw earlier, Panuya Baal Pnuya, Shalol l'shem yishut. If you have a single man and a single woman who have intercourse that is not l'shem yishut, not for marriage, asa zonah. She is declared to be a zonah according to him. That means that even outside the context of marriage, any biyah, according to him, is considered to be a biyah znut, and that renders the woman a zonah. Hani milei ish. That's only true by a man. Avalisha pritzuta bi'amahu. When it comes to a woman, that is simply called promiscuous behavior. That is not called a zonah. Now, nashim misololot, Rashi over here gives one explanation. Rashi over here, it just says that it's two women who are engaged in activity with each other. Rashi claims that they are rubbing their private parts together in order to stimulate each other. Tosafot brings an unusual explanation, but then he goes and brings Rashi from somewhere else in Shas, which is actually the explanation of other Rishonim over here, which is, there's nobody believes that these women are classified as a zonah here, because there's no biyah. If there's no biyah, you can't be a zonah. So the way the Ritva describes it is that it's not a psula kuhuna. Psula kuhuna is someone who's declared as a zonah. Whereas it's a psul to Kohen Gadol. The question here is that whether she's considered to be psula for Kohen Gadol, because a Kohen Gadol must marry a bitula. So in their activity together, these two women, that caused a problem with her bitulim. And since she now lost her bitulim, what's her status because of these lost bitulim? Is this considered to be one of those that's okay for the Kohen Gadol or not okay for the Kohen Gadol? And Rav Huna says it's problematic for the Kohen Gadol. Tosafot over here rejects that explanation because he says that the Gemara here, first of all, says kihuna and does not say Kohen Gadol. Number two, the Gemara here focuses on zonah. Zonah is an issue for everybody. If the problem is bitula, then he should have said the problem is bitula and not a zonah. So, therefore, he favors Rashi's explanation over here, which is that these are two women who are engaged in stimulating activity with each other. Even though that's not called bi'ah, nevertheless, Rav Huna declared it to be a activity of a zonah, whereas the Gemara concludes that that's just pritzuta be'alma. That's just promiscuous behavior that is not considered to be yad, that's not make her into a zonah. Now, why this is important is because of the havamina. Tosafot brings a havamina, and then that connects back to the Gemara above, and it becomes a very large sugya. Tosafot brings from the Rivan originally, is that mektilot shichvat zera shikblu mimalehem. They are actually inseminating themselves with the semen that they received from their husbands. That's what he says, nashim mitzololot, means that they're basically impregnating themselves without bi'ah, using the semen of their husbands. Tosafot brings to the Rivan, he says, v'lo yitachein. He says, that cannot be the explanation over here. One of the reasons he says is, the Gemara here brings panuya ba'al panuya, so that means that she's not married. That's the case, even the case when they bring Rav Elazar, and he also brings another example from other places in Shas that mention this, that also state that these were women who were not married. So it's not talking about women who are married. Now, that does raise the issue in general, and then goes back to what we saw before, which is the issue of IVF or artificial insemination, which is taken up by the Poskim. This comment in Tosafot, as well as the Gemara before, basically raised the two major issues in terms of artificial insemination. There is one other Gemara, which we've seen before, which is the possibility of a woman becoming impregnated when she goes into the bathhouse, and she became impregnated from the fact that there was somebody had left semen deposited in the bathhouse, and she becomes pregnant. Then what's the status of that woman, or what's the status of that impregnation? If you put those together, you get this sugya of artificial insemination, which are the number of questions. I'll lay them out here. It's very complex in the poskim. I could send mikorot about it, but just so that you know the basic issues. The first of the issues is, how do we generate the semen or the zera over here, the shechvat zera, in order to inseminate the woman? Because you have a problem, which we know in general, which is that you shouldn't make keri for no reason. A person shouldn't have an erection, not for the purposes of biyah. A person should not be dispensing shechvat zera. Over here, they're testing the individual. Is that because they're testing the individual, it's allowed over here? So maybe it's allowed when you're trying to inseminate. And so that's one of the key elements here, is how do you draw the semen from the man in order to impregnate the woman? Is this done through stimulation, or is it done by drawing, which they can do also, which is that they use a needle and they draw out the semen, and then they do it in that manner. Is it, first of all, allowed? How is it produced? And that's the collection of the semen is the first step on IVF in determining whether it's allowed and whether we can do it. The second is inseminating the woman. Is that, number one, allowed? Number two is, what is the status of a baby that is inseminated? Who is considered to be the father and who is considered to be the mother? And then obviously the complexities build when the insemination is not from the father, or in possibility that the eggs or the ovum are not from the woman herself, but are contributed from an outside party. And so that adds another dimension of complexity here. That's not the discussion here, but that's clearly a question as to who becomes the parent in these situations. Is the parent determined by the zera and by the beitzim that are donated by the husband and the wife? Or is the determination of parenthood by the birth? Who gives the natural birth to this baby when it passes through the birthing canal? Is that for the determination of motherhood or biological connection? So all of these have become serious issues in terms of artificial insemination. Obviously, it's much easier when the contributing parties are the mother and father, because then at least biologically we know that the mother and father are the same as the carrier or the carrier mother in the end. Then if you have a surrogate mother, which is there, where you have the zera and the beitzim of the woman and the man, but now the baby's being carried by a third-party woman, it's just the questions in reverse, which is, who are they considered to be the parents? Is it those that are contributing the component parts, or is the woman who carries the baby and births the baby, is she considered to be the mother? So all of these complexities come up. The Gemara here only has a piece of the puzzle here. The other piece of the puzzle I mentioned before is the woman who becomes impregnated inside of a bathhouse from the floating semen. What does that mean in terms of the motherhood or the nature of the baby? Is that considered to be as if she had znut? Is that baby considered to be her baby and her husband's baby? All of these questions come up in this context. All right, so I wanted to raise the issue because of Tosfos Havamina about what Nashim is Solulot are, as well as the question we had before with Rav Yosef, Abai and Rava, about how they generated the semen in this case. All of those relate to this issue of artificial insemination. All right, next Mishnah. Ptzua daka, rekrut shofcha, mutarim b'giyoret, u'mishukhreret. Ptzua daka and rekrut shofcha are allowed to marry giyoret and mishukhreret. Ve'inan masurim elo milavo b'kal. Their only restriction is joining the cow, because it says, lo yavo ptzua daka v'kut shofcha b'kal Hashem. So they're not allowed to enter Kal Hashem, they're not allowed to marry into Kal Hashem, but anybody who's not under that rubric of Kal Hashem, they can marry. And that's, we've seen before, giyoret and mishukhreret are not considered to be part of Kahal Hashem, even though they can be Jewish. And even though they are part of the Jewish nation, they may not have the status of Kahal Hashem. And that's why the Ptzua Daka, Kut Shavcha, can marry such women. Ptzua Daka Kohen. What happens if you're a Ptzua Daka that is a Kohen? Mahu b'giyoret u'mishukhreret. What's the din with regards to giyoret u'mishukhreret? B'kidushutei kai. He remains a Kohen, even though he's a Ptzua Daka, or Kut Shavcha, which prevents him to marrying to Kal Hashem, but he's still a Kohen. And a Kohen is a seer, is a sur in a Giyoret and Mishukhreret. Here Rashi is explicit as to why he thinks Giyoret and Mishukhreret are problematic. Mishom Zona, because they are considered to be Zonot, Sheniv Allah Mikodem, because they already had relations with people beforehand, and maybe even free relations with people beforehand, meaning that unencumbered relations with the multiple parties. We discussed this more extensively earlier in the Masechta. I'm not going to do it again, but why a Gioret is problematic for a Kohen? Rashi clearly says here the problem of Gioret and Mishukhreret, which we mentioned back then, was that she's a Zona. Now, many of the Rishonim say that, why is she a Zona? Why is she classified as Zona? And even if she was classified as Zona, when she converts, she's Kekatan Shenolad Dami. And therefore, it erases all of that, and maybe she shouldn't be classified as a Zona. So we saw the different Rishonim's approach to it. I'm just pointing out Rashi over here is clear that he thinks the problem is Zona. So the problem here for the Kohen is that she's a Zona. So now, if he is a Ptzua Daka, that's a Kohen. As far as Ptzua Daka is concerned, he's not allowed to join Kal Hashem, but Giyoret and Mishukhreret are not problematic. So we got over that problem. But there now is a secondary problem, which is a Kohen is not allowed to marry a Zona. Does he still have a Kedushat Kohen? Does this cause him to lose his kedusha as a kohen or not? And that's the question of the Gemara over here. Oh, Dilma la b'kedushei kohen v'shori. Maybe he loses kedushat kohen in this case. So, for instance, we have other instances by kohen halal. So kohen halal does not only as a halal, but he loses his kedusha as a kohen. So does Ptzua Daka do the same thing over here? Samalei Rav Sheshet, tinitua. We have a Mishnah. Ptzua Daka Yisrael mutar b'netina. A Ptzua Daka Yisrael is allowed to marry netina. V'isak adatcha b'kedushei kohen. If you think he retains his kedusha, ikrei kan lo titchatein bam. then he is intermarrying if he's marrying a Nitina. Nitina is from one of the Shiva Amamim. We saw earlier in the Masechta that Loti Tachadein Bam is a statement by the Shiva Amamim. It says you're not allowed to marry with them. So if you intermarry with a Nitina, or the here we have a Breita that allows you to marry a Nitina if you're a Psua Daka Yisrael, that means that you're not maintaining the Kedusha. So Amarova, Atum Hatum Mishum Kedusha V'la Kedushahu? Is it really over there? The problem is whether he has Kedushat Yisrael or not Kedushat Yisrael. Dima Molid Ben, Bazil Polach Levadat Kochavim. The whole problem of Loti Tchatein Bam is that we're afraid that you're going to have a child, and then that child's going to be taken off to worship Avodah Zarah. Means that he's going to be pulled off the Derech. So then he says, Ani Milei Biotam Ovdei Kochavim. That's only true when they're still not Jewish. So now you have a very important statement over here that the Biotam Ovdei Kochavim, there's the problem. Kimi Gairei, B'Yisrael Sharu. So once they convert, and Nitina is allowed to marry into Klal Yisrael. Rabbananu deGozerbo, and the Rabbanim were Gozer that you can't marry a Nitina. So what Rava is suggesting at this point is that the case here is not a case where the Nitina is still a Goya. It's a case where she converted. She converted to be a Jew already. Nevertheless, the Chachamim were Gozer by Nitina that they may not join Klal Yisrael. They only did that when people who can reproduce. But those that cannot reproduce, they were not gozer. So the gzeirat chachamim is about the child that is born. The fear is the child that is born. And the gzeirat was put in place in order to prevent children being born from these types of unions. So if you have an instance where this individual is not going to reproduce, then the gzeira is not meaningful to that person, and that's why we allow Tzua Daka to marry a Nitina. It's not a problem of Loti Tchatein Bam, she already converted. It's a problem of gzeira. The gzeira is just not applicable to this individual because he's not going to create offspring. Mara says, Elamiato, Mamzer debaro lide. What about a Mamzer who does give birth? So now, is he subject to this gzeira by the Nitina? Hachanami dasir. Now you're going to tell me that they are restricted in Nitina. Vatznan, we have the Mishnah in Kiddushin that says, Mamzerim v'nitinim mutarim lo v'ozeh b'zeh. Mamzer and Nitina are allowed to cross-marry. They're allowed to marry between them. There's no problem there. Ela, ki gazur rabbonon b'ksherim b'psulim lo gazur. So then they shift this and say that the rabbonon were only gozer by ksherim, but those that are psulim lo gazur rabbonon. The Rabbanim were not gozer by psulim. Now psulim here are mamzerim and psua daka. So it's not unique to psua daka anymore. They have no evidence now about what the status of psua daka is. It's has to do with all psulim. Now why would you only be gozer by ksherim and not by psulim? So Rashi over here says the gzerah is either because mishum demilta lo shkichahi. The Chachamim only put gzerot in place for things that are commonplace. They don't imagine all the craziest cases in the world and put a gzera in place. They only put a gzera in place for what is considered to be the normal course, normal cases. So over here, by a psul, like a mamzer and psua daka, which are unusual cases, the gzera is not applicable to them. That's one possibility. Inami, shelo hayta zu gzera mishum isur, elefi shelo yirachmanim. The truth is that the gzera here is not because they're really asur levo bakal. The problem why the nitinot are not allowed to marry a Yisrael is because we have evidence of the fact that they don't share the character trait that those of Bnei Yisrael do, which are Rachmanim. They're not merciful, and that's from the story in the time of David HaMelech, where they want revenge on Shaul for killing out the city of Nov. And when he killed out the city of Nov, he killed all the Givonim in Nov, and they want revenge, and they hang out the bodies, and they leave them out there for months and months on end, and they see that they are not Rachmanim in that way. And so David was gozer on them at that time that they should not join Klal Yisrael, that they should not be accepted into Klal Yisrael. So there again, the problem is that they're not Rachmanim, and so the Gzeirah is not a Gzeirah about Kedusha, it's not a Gzeirah about the ability to reproduce, it's simply a Gzeirah that they're not Asur, they really can join, but we have an external Gzeirah which prevents them from joining because they're not Rachmanim. So that can be overcome by the fact that either it's a Mamzer or Psua Daka, they're the Chachamim, we're not Gozer. So now, Hadara Mar Rova, Rova now reverses his position and says something that has huge implications, which is, I love milti. That's not what I said. It's not right because biota ovdei kochavim letlei chatnut. I said before the Isra of loti tchatein bam is when they are non-Jewish. He says that certainly can't be the case because there's no such thing as a marriage with a non-Jew. Chitun implies that there is an ability to have a marriage take hold. Marriage halachically will not take hold with a non-Jewish woman. So how can you say lo tith kantein bam about one of the Shiva Amamim, because it won't take hold? Ela nitzgaru itlu chatrut. When they convert, that's when they have the ability to marry. What Rava says over here is incredible. He says that the restriction of lo tith kantein bam is not to marry a non-Jewish woman. The restriction is to marry a convert from the Shiva Amamim. If a woman converts from the Shiva Amamim, you're not allowed to marry her. That is the issue of lo tith kantein bam. Tosafot already over here asks, we had earlier in the Masechta, also in Avodah Zarah, and many other places, the Gemara quotes, lo tith kantein bam is an issue to marry non-Jewish women, to intermarry. So Tosafot over here comes up. The Rabbeinu Tam gives one reason, Tosafot gives another reason, that there are multiple Yisurim in those Pesukim over there, which is that there is an Yisur, according to Rava, of marrying women from the Shiva Amamim that converted. And then there's a separate Yisur of intermarrying, which is covered by lo tith kantein bam, or other Yisurim that they mentioned in those Pesukim over there, of how we get to this other Yisur. So there's two parts to this Yisur of lo tith kantein bam. One which is the traditional one we think of intermarriage. The other one is marrying women from the Shiva Amamim that convert. That dealt with the sugi that we dealt with earlier, with are the Yisurim that are found in those Pesukim, only shayach to this Shiva Amamim, where they shayach to all non-Jews. Now, Meitiv Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef now asks, it says by Shlomo HaMelech, Ve'itchaten Shlomo, Bat Paro, Melech Mitzrayim. Shlomo married the princess of Mitzrayim. How did he marry her? She was non-Jewish. Isn't there a problem with that? Where it says, Giyure Gaire. He converted her. V'ha, lo kiblu gerim, lo bimei David, lo bimei Shlomo. We saw earlier in the Masechta that they didn't accept gerim in the time of David and Shlomo, because they were only converting because things were good, not because they really wanted to be Jewish. So Gemara says, Midu time el shulchan melachim. Isn't the whole reason we didn't allow converts in that time is because they were coming for the good life, not because they really wanted to join the Jewish faith? Halo tzrichale. That you don't need, because she was already a princess. And you can't claim she was coming to get the good life. She already had the good life. So she wasn't marrying him for that. It must have been she converted because she really wanted to join the faith. But now the Gemara says, but typically da mitzrit rishonahi. Wait a minute. Even if she converts, she's still a first generation mitzrit. Rashi says the question of the Gemara here is, even though she is now mitgayer and she's a mitzrit rishonah, karlei chadnut. You see that there's still marriage takes hold over here. So Rashi thinks it's going back to the original statement of Rava, who says that lo tith chatein bam applies to the Shiva Amamim and converting over here. So Rashi says over here, you see that by a mitzrit rishonah, that chadnut does take effect, even though when she converted and she's not allowed to join Klal Yisrael, still chitun takes effect. She's one of the restricted women, so maybe it shouldn't take hold. Your question is asked by Tosafot, and he says, I don't understand Rashi's question. We know that it's only an Isralav by a mitzrit, and therefore, of course, Kiddushin takes hold. It's one of the things that Kiddushin is tofsin by a mitzrit. So what? That can't be the question of the Gemara. The question of the Gemara is, she's a convert that is still restricted. When you convert a mitzrit, still in the first generation, you still have to wait until the third generation before they're mutarim to join Klal Yisrael. So how did he marry her? If you say those mitzrim that were in Mitzrayim are gone, and now we have different people now who are the mitzrim that are there. Now Rashi claims, oh, all those mitzrim that were there, they drowned with Paro, and they were eliminated during the travails of the Esther Makot and the Yam Suf in Mitzrayim. And now you have new people there. And then the restriction that was set at that time, because it's set after that time, that restriction was set about the era of Rav. Those mitzrim that joined Bnei Yisrael and they left, those are the people. But the nation that was left behind, they weren't mitzrim anymore. If you want to say that, Vatanya, we have a braita that indicates otherwise, which is Amar Rav Yehuda, Min Yamin Ger Mitzri Haya, Li Chaver Mitamidei Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Yehuda says, I had a chavrusa who was a Ger Mitzri of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. So Amar, Ani Mitzri Rishon, Nasati Mitzrit Rishona. Min Yamin says, I'm a Mitzri Rishona, and I married a woman who's also a Mitzrit Rishona. Asil Ibni Mitzrit Shniya. I will have my son marry a Mitzrit, a woman who is a convert, but is a second generation convert. So that the third generation, my son, will be able to vote Bekal. Because if his son is a second generation Mitzrit, married a woman who's a first generation Mitzrit, you go after the most Pasul Bahem. So therefore, he would make the child into a second-generation Mitzri again, because his wife was a first-generation Mitzrit. So he says, I'm going to be a second-generation Mitzrit. That's as far as Binyamin is concerned. Now, Binyamin's statement says that in the time of Rabbi Akiva, they're still worried about Mitzrim. So if they're Mitzrim there in the time of Rabbi Akiva, they're certainly there in the time of Shlomo HaMelech. So we see clearly that the Mitzrim are still Mitzrim. The Egyptians are still Egyptians. There is a very large Tosafot over here that discusses the issue of whether nations are still the original nations that were spoken about in the Torah, especially based on the Gemara in Brachot that says, Basan Chered Vibil Belet Kol HaUmot, that Chered came and mixed up all the nations, and therefore the Gemara over there talks about a Ger Amoni being mutar to come into Klal Yisrael because the Amonim that live there are not really the Amonim. So Tosafot is trying to reconcile between that Pesach and the Gemara in Brachot and what is being said here by Minyamin HaMitzri, who is saying that Mitzrim are still in place. So he goes to the Nevuot in Yechezkel and shows that in those Nevuot, Mitzrayim was promised to come back to their original territory. And therefore, even though they were dispersed or put into Galut, they actually returned based on that Nevuah. Even though it says the same thing by Amon, nevertheless, by Amon, it doesn't give a fixed time about which it will happen or when it will happen versus the Mitzrayim, where there is a fixed time in which it will transpire. So Tosafot says that's a key difference. Mitzrayim or Mitzrim are different than all the other nations. In addition to that, Tosafot also adds that even though the Gemara mentions in a number of places Bas and Cherev Bilbel Tomot, he says it wasn't just Sancheriv. It also happened again in the time of Nebuchadnezzar. In the time of the Churban HaBayit, when Nebuchadnezzar comes, he also does the same thing again. And that might be the contributing factor as to the Amon and Moav, as to why we accepted that Ger Amoni in the Gemara and Brachot, because of what Nebuchadnezzar did in terms of mixing up the nations of the world. And obviously this has implications for these dinim in terms of the nations, as well as dinim like Mechiyat Amalek that are associated with specific nations, as to whether we really have any idea as to where those nations are, or the people of those nations, do they still exist? Even though maybe their territories, we know where they are, but the people living in those territories, are they really descendants of the original inhabitants of the land? So Gemara says, Amar Papa Anan Mishlomo Leiko Venetiv, says from Shlomo Melech, we're going to ask a question, we're going to bring any proof. Shlomo Lo Nosiv, Shlomo never got married to these women. Midei Tichdiv, didn't you look in the Psukim that describes Shlomo Melech's life, which is Minagoyim Asher Amar Hashem El Bnei Yisrael Tavo Behem, from amongst the nations that Hashem said we should not interact or intermarry. We said, Behem lo yavo bachem, and you're not allowed, they're not allowed to join you, meaning that there can't be marriage between these parties. Achein yatu adlev bachem achrei Elohim, because they will cause you to stray after their gods. Behem davak Shlomo de'ava. Shlomo hung out with these women for love. So now the Gemara's diuk is from here is that he did not marry them, but he had relationships with them. He had znut with them. Elakasha ve'itchatein. Doesn't it say in the pasuk that we quoted before that he married Bat Paro? How can you say marriage if you're telling me that he wasn't married? So mitoch ava yitira she'ava ma'aleh alav ha'ketuv ki litchatein ba. Because of the tremendous love and desire that he had for Bat Paro, as if he married her. It's clear here the Gemara is working around the problem, trying to figure it out. How do we deal with this issue? The Rambam, when he brings down about Shlomo Melech, says that he married them b'geyutan. He married them after they converted, using the Gemara's first answer here, that they were converted in this case, and that's how they married into with foreign women. It's clear here that Shlomo Melech marries Bat Paro, not because of his love necessarily for Bat Paro, but because it cemented a military alliance with her father, who was at that time still problematic for Shlomo Melech. Even though Shlomo Melech extends the kingdom into large swaths of land and conquers from the time of David Melech already, and Shlomo extends it even further, in the south, Paro is still a very strong, formative enemy. And by marrying Bat Paro, he staves off any problems in the south and basically creates an alliance where he's not going to be attacked from the south. But she has huge influence over Shlomo's kingdom, and we see that by the cities that she builds, as well as the influence she has over Shlomo Melech. That's the case, is because she's coming from a very powerful family. She's coming from her father, who's extremely powerful, so there is not necessarily an even, quote-unquote, marriage over here. And she is wielding a lot of power because of her father, Paro, in the south. So that's really the nature of the marriage here. It was a very common in their time, and common all the way through the Middle Ages to almost close to modern era, where their marriages, in terms of kingdoms, were political or alliances in order to cement alliances. Of course, you won't attack your grandchild or your child, and that's how you cement the alliance, by having children marry in order to cement alliances or military alliances between different kingdoms. So that was the same nature of the marriage over here. The Gemara is always trying to deal with the halachic ramifications of what happened over here. And in the end, says that he didn't really marry her. It was znut. Now, whether he didn't marry her, he might have thought he married her. But he might not have married her because he is unable to marry her. And therefore, that's what the Gemara says, that it was all considered to be Biad Znot out of his desire for these women.
So marry her and it just wasn't po-faced?
Right, so that's what I'm saying. Maybe that's what the Gemara means over here. It's not clear what the Gemara is saying over here, but that might be one of the solutions to the problem. Amrle Ravina the Ravashi, Va'ananetnan. Don't we have our Mishnah? Tzua daka b'kud shofcha mutarim b'giorot m'shukweret. Ha b'netina sireis. We're going back to our original question. Are you allowed to marry a netina? We have our Mishnah that says that they're allowed to marry a giorot m'shukweret, but it doesn't mention netina in that list. Amrle v'litiyameich ema seifa. What are you going to do about the latter half of our Mishnah? It says, v'ena nasur ne'elam avo b'kal. They're not allowed to join the kal. Ha b'netina sharu. You would be medayik. You would infer the opposite from the latter half of the Mishnah. You can't be medayik out of our Mishnah, because our Mishnah gives you the two sides of the equation. It says, you can marry Mishukheret and a Gioret. You can't go to the Kaal. So anything between those two categories, you can't be medayik out of the Mishnah, because one half of the Mishnah will tell you something, the other half of the Mishnah will tell you the opposite. So it says, our Mishnah is not evidence of the fact whether you're allowed to or not allowed to marry a Netina. And again, what we'll govern over here is the statement that we brought from the Braita before, which is that you are allowed, the Psua Daka is allowed to marry a Netina. That's the case by Yisrael. Again, by a Kohen, we have to ask the question of whether he still has Kiddusha or does not have Kiddusha. And that the Gemara was trying to assess through Lotit Chatein Bam. But then Rava, in the end, said that that can't be the proof from Lotit Chatein Bam because there's Gioret, it's all Gzeira. Then Rava reversed that and said, no, La Milti, but that it has to do when they're Nitgayiru. And if they were Nitgayiru, and that's where the Isra of Lotit Chatein Bam applies, then if we allow them to marry her, that shows you that a Psua Daka does not have Kiddusha. If he doesn't have Kedusha, that's why he's allowed to marry a Netina, and that's why a Kohen would also be Mutar to marry Giorot and Mishukheret, even though a Kohen normally couldn't. A Ptua Daka Kohen could do that because he's not big Kedushato Kai. Right now, next Mishnah. This is a very famous Mishnah and story here, which is Amoni u'Moavi Asurim. Bisuram Misur Olam. An Amoni and Moavi convert are Asur. They may not join the Kaal, and their Isur is permanent. Alva Nikvotehem Mutarot Miyad. They are allowed to join the Kaal immediately. There is no waiting period for them. Their women, their females are Mutarot, which is the famous Amoni velo Amonit, Moavi velo Moavit. Mitzri v'Adomi, enam asurim el'ad shlosh adorot. Mitzri and Domini have to wait three generations before they can join the Kaal. Echad zircharim v'echad nekevot. That's by males and females. They have to wait the waiting period. Nobody's exempt from the waiting period. Rabbi Shimon Matir, the nekevot yad. Shimon says the Nekevot are Mutarot right away. Just like the Ammonit and Moavit are Mutarot right away, so too the Mitzrit. Amar Rabbi Shimon Kal v'chomer. It's a logical argument. By Ammoni and Moavit, where they're permanent, they're not allowed to join Klal Yisrael. Hitir at the Nekevot Miyad. There the females can join immediately. The place where the males are only restricted till the third generation. In Udinshna Tiratanekivot Miyad, certainly the females should be Mutarot right away. Amrlo, im halacha nikabel. If you have a Mesorah like this from your Rebbe, we'll accept it. V'im ledin, if you're making a logical argument, yesh tshuva. We have an answer to that question, which the Gemara will bring up, why this is not a good kal v'chomer. Amrlem, lo ki halacha niomer. Even though I'm telling you a logical argument, I also have a Mesorah that this is the case, that a Mitzrit can join right away. Okay, minahani mile. Am Rabbi Yochanan damakra. When David was going out to greet the Plishti, here is Goliath. He speaks to Avner, who is his general. Ben, Mize Anar Avner. Who is this young man? Who is he the son of? What's his lineage? What's his family? He was this young whippersnapper. Avner says, I have no clue. I'm going to take a shua that I have no clue. So Mar says, he really didn't know him. This is a more general problem. It's a significant problem that all the Rishonim have to deal with, which is, that is Perek Yud Zayin in Shmuel Aleph. In Perek Tet Zayin in Shmuel Aleph, David HaMelech is found in front of Shaul. He's well known to Shaul, and he's well known to Avner. So a Perek before, everybody knows who David HaMelech is. All of a sudden, in Perek Yud Zayin, David HaMelech shows up, and nobody knows who he is. So that's what Gemara says, V'aktiv. V'yoveo ma'od, v'yilo nosei kelim. Shaul loved David, and he was his weapons bearer. So how did he not know who David was if he was working for him in the previous parak? Ila avua kamashil. He was asking him who his father was. Gemara says, Ravi lo yadale. He didn't know about his father. Vaktiv. Says there, Vaish bimei Shaul zakein baba nashim. That Ishai, in the time of Shaul, was amongst the men. That's what it means, the ish was a big gun. That's the ishai of the ish. He was a commander of a large contingent over here. Rashi says, Sarah Samech Rubo. He was a general over 600,000 individuals or 600,000 people. So he's a big gun. That's pretty high up in the government ranks. So then how did he not know who this ishai was? Hachikamar Shaul. Imi peretzati, imi zerachati. So Shaul is asking a much more detailed question is, yes, he's from Yehuda. We know that he's Ishai. We know he's from Shevet Yehuda. Which leg of Yehuda is he from? Is he from the leg of Peretz or is he from the leg of Zerach? Imi peretzati, malka avi. If he's from Peretz, then he's going to be a king. Shamelech poretz lasot derech v'in memachim biyado. Because a king can break down walls. He has eminent domain, basically, and he can walk through fields and break down walls without any problem to make the shortest distance. If he's from Zerach, he's going to be an important guy, but he's not going to be the king. Obviously, Shaul, who is the king now, is worried about the fact that David might take over as the king. He sees in him, we call it tachsisei machut, he sees a person that has the character of being a leader. The question is, what type of leader is he going to be? Is he going to be from Peretz, which is going to make him into a king, which is Peretz, that's the nature of the king? Is he going to be a king, or is he from Zerach, which is that he will be a big guy, but he won't be the king? So that was the question he asked, and that's what Avner couldn't answer. He didn't know what his lineage was. He knew he was David ben Ishai, but he didn't know his longer lineage line of whether he came from Zerach or from Peretz. Right, so now here the Gemara invents the question or changes the nature of the question in order to reconcile between Tetzayin, Yudzayin, in Shmuel Aleph, just to know that it's a broader problem. Because of the nature of it, where David is well known and in the house of Shaul and well known to Abner, and then all of a sudden in the next parasha when he shows up to bring food to his brothers and fights Goliath, nobody knows who he is, and he suddenly rises to be the hero of Klal Yisrael in the Perek. So it's similar to other places in Torah, but the Torah tells us two stories, and the two stories seem parallel, but they're kept separate. So similarly over here, you have two stories that are parallel, and the Torah does this many times. The nature of this is that the Torah is describing it to two paths of the rise of David HaMelech. There's a rise of David HaMelech through the natural course, which is through working in the house of Shaul, playing music, and then being part of the weapons bearer. And there's also the meteoric rise of David HaMelech, the miraculous rise of David HaMelech when he comes and kills Goliath. And probably they both happened. But in order to emphasize the different natures of these stories, the Torah will split the stories into half and make them look as if they're totally independent stories. Even though they're parallel and almost interwoven stories, Torah or the Navi will separate the stories into two separate, totally distinct stories in order to emphasize that there were two ways that David rose to be a leader. He rose through natural means, like working his way up, but he also rose through these meteoric rise through being a hero and killing Goliath. So the Navi emphasizes that by separating out the Prakim, but making it look like as in one parak he doesn't know him and the other parak he does know him to describe these two Drachim or Masbulim that David HaMelech took. That's just a short answer to a very difficult and long question. All right. My time, Amarle Shalale. What caused Shaul to ask about David? What prompts him to ask, who's this guy, David? Shaul at David Madav Kimidato. When David decides that he's going to go out to fight Goliath, Shaul dresses him up with his clothing, puts him on his clothing, Kimidato. And it worked out that it fit him. That from his shoulder and upwards, he was taller than anybody else. So David HaMelech had a presence like a king. I mean, he was a very big, tall guy, and therefore he had the presence of a king, and he fit into Shaul's clothing or ring of royalty. Before you ask the question whether he's ra'oi to be royalty or not, better start asking the question whether this guy's Jewish even. My time, he comes from Ruta Moabia. He's from a Moabite convert. He shouldn't be kosher to Volakal at all. Shaul is asking about David being the king. Doeg Adomi, who's an advisor to Shaul, tells him, why are you asking about him being a king? Ask him because they're even Jewish. So Avner pipes up. This is always the nature of the Gemara. They make conversations in Nach always about halachic discussions. So over here, they're saying that all the discourse between them was all about this halachic discussion. Avner pipes up and says, Tanina, we have a Mishnah. Amoni velo ma'amonit, ma'avi velo mo'avit. So we have a Mishnah that says that the females are allowed. Eliyata mamzer velo mamzeret. So Doeg Adomi fires back and says, it counters, wait. Oh, so anytime it uses the male form, it means the male, not the female. So say mamzer, not mamzeret. Mamzer aktiv. No, there it says mamzer, mumzar. Anybody who has this mum or this defect in them, they're considered to be a mamzer. So it doesn't matter, irrespective of male or female. But mitzri velo mitzrit, why don't you say there, mitzri velo mitzrit? Also the female mitzrit should be allowed. Like Rabbi Shimon suggests in our Mishnah, that's what Doeg Adumi is claiming. So he's trying to shoot down Avner's point by saying, look, if you say Amoni ben Omoit, Mavo Movit, it opens up Pandora's box, but we don't see the same thing by Mitzri velo Mitzrit, so that's evidence of the fact that you're wrong about this. So I say, Shani Ocha, de Mefresh, time of the Kra. Over here, it tells you why an Amoni and a Moavi may not join Kal Hashem. It says, Ashelo Kidmo Etchem Belechem Obamayim, that they didn't come and greet you when you left Mitzrayim with water and bread. They didn't take care of you when you left Mitzrayim, or when you were traveling in the Midbar to come around. They didn't take care of you. The nature of a man is to go out and be the one who presents and interacts in this way, not the woman. Therefore, the men were punished, but not the women. So he said, Doeg says, Hayalahem lekadem anashim likrat anashim, velashim likrat nashim. Right, you could have had it be appropriate where the men went to greet the men, and the women went to greet the women. He kept it separate. It should have been fine. Ishtik. He had no answer. So Avner has no response. Retort to that. Miyad bayomer melech sha'al ata ben mizeh ha'aleim. Go and ask who this young man is. The word aleim here is used as a nar, the same as a nar, which is go and ask about this guy. So Gemara says, hotem karile nar, hocha karile aleim. Over there, it's called him a nar in the previous pasuk that we quoted. Now it calls him an aleim. Why does he change the word that he says? Hacha kamarle halacha nitalma mimcha. Says the halacha left you. He's saying to Doeg Adumi, say v'shal bebeit midrash. Saying, look, you forgot the halacha. Go find out in the beit midrash what the halacha is. Sha'al. They went to the beit midrash. Amrule amoni v'lo amonit moavi v'lo amonit. Actually, Doeg kohani kushyoto. Doeg presents them with all his questions. Ishtiko. They went silent. Again, Doeg Adumi's question silenced the Beit Din. They don't have an answer for him again about Mitzri below Mitzrit or the reasoning Ashelo Kidmu Etchem should apply both equally to men and women. So Balei Chzuz Elei, they wanted to now announce that David wasn't Jewish, basically to disqualify him from being Jewish or from even being royalty because he wasn't Jewish. Miad Bamasa Ben Ish Ushmo Yitra HaYisraeli Asher Bael Abigail Bat Nachash Uchtiv Yater HaYishmaeli. In Divrei Yamim, instead of calling him Yitra HaYisraeli, he calls him there Yater HaYishmaeli. Amarov HaMomed Shechagar Chobok Yishmael. He pulled his sword like a Yishmaelite. V'amar Kol Mishenu Shomei Halacha Zu Yidaker Becherev. Anybody who doesn't listen to this halacha will be stabbed by the sword, which is Kach Mikumulani BeBeit Dino Shel Shmuel Aramati. This is the Mesorah I have from the Beit Din of Shmuel. Amoni v'lo amonit, Moavi v'lo amit. Umi mehemen. Can we believe him? V'amar Rabbi Ava Merav, Kol Tomi Chacham Shomer Halacha, Uva, if a person is giving a psak halacha, Im Kol Demase Amra, if he tells us about a Mesorah that he has before an incident took place in front of him or about him, then Shomim Lo, we listen to him. V'im Lav, if it's in the time of the incident, ain't Shomim Lo, because we think that he's inventing it to solve the problem or to deal with the issue. But all of a sudden now he remembers the Mesorah when he's in trouble or he needs the case. You can see here that Tosafot, the top Tosafot in Anzayin Amud Aleph says from the Rabbeinu Tam that this is Hainu Davka Heicha Duhu Atzmanu Geba Davar. That we only invoke this principle of not bringing in a din during a case when he is no Geba Davar. The case is about him. But if the case is about someone else, we do allow him to enter information from the outside, even though this is the first time we're hearing about this information from him. So Shani Ocho, the Gemara says, that Shmuel Beitino Kayam. That Shmuel and his Beitim are still alive. So therefore he's not going to lie about this because we can go check and see if he really had the Mesorah. So over here it's not a question that he brought it up during the incident because we have a way to check the veracity of his information. So therefore it's not a problem in terms of Kabbalah. Mikomakom Kasha. It's a problem about the women. What are you going to do about the women here? There's clear that the reasoning of Shalom Kibmu Etchem should not be enough of a reason to just say the males and not the females. So how are you going to explain that? Where it says, Harga Targumo, Kol Kvoda Bat Melech Pnima. The kvod of a woman is to be Tzanua, and therefore the women shouldn't go out even to greet the other women. They are found at home, they are found in the tent, and therefore they do not go out to greet either other women. They stay at home. So now, B'marav Amrei, in Eretz Yisrael, they brought another proof to that, being Tamer Rabbi Yitzchak Amar Kra, by Yomru Elav, the Malachim say to Avram Avinu, Ayesara Ishtecha, Where is your wife Sarah? Why? Because Sarah is in the tent. I mean that the women don't come out to greet. The women are found. And the kvodah, bat melech, the honor of the princess is prima, is internal. Internal both in terms of personally it's niyut, but also in terms of our interaction in the outside world. Her command, her kingdom is the home. She is the malkah habayit. She runs the house. She's the akarat habayit. And that's her fiefdom. Going outside and working in the outside world and interacting in the outside world, that's the purview of the man. And so, Ashalok idmu etchem, balechem obumayim, was a problem of the men and not a problem of the women. And that's why we say, Moavi velo Moavit, Amoni velo Amonit. And the Gemara concludes, Kitanae, Amoni velo Amonit, Moavi velo Moavit, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda learns it out as a diuk lishonit, out of an inference from the language of using Amoni Moavi versus Amonit and Moavit. Rabbi Shimon Omer, al davar shalu kidmu etchem balechem ubamayim, darko shalish lekadeim vechule. And Rabbi Shimon brings the reason that we saw before, that the reason behind why there are sur to join Shkal Hashem is only relevant by the men and not relevant by the women. Tosfot does raise the issue, according to Rabbi Yehuda, like the question of Doeg Adomi, why doesn't he also say Mitzri velo Mitzrit? So then, Tosfot gives the answer, since the Lashon is slightly different here, it could have written Amon Moav, instead it writes Amoni Moavi. That's what drives the diuk halishonit over here, which is not true by Mitzri. On the other hand, the Tosfot Yishanim says, the time of the Rabbi Yehuda lo darshinem velo mitzrit, mishum dichtiv gavi mitzri, banim asher yivaldu lahem dor shlishi, yavo lahem mikal Hashem. Hakatuv tal'o bileida, imkein galei karat, nekivot asurot. Since the Torah connects it to offspring and to the birth of a child, it's clear that the mitzrit is also involved in the isur. And because of that, the diuk lishonit is not done by Mitzri, unlike the case by Amoni Umoavi. There is a deeper question asked by the Rishonim over here, which is, the Asher lo kidmu etchem lechem ubamayim is only said about Amon, not about Moav. By Moav, it says, Asher sachar lechem et Bil'am, that they actually hired Bil'am, and that was the problem. So there are two answers given by the Rishonim. Either the Schirat Bil'am is something definitely done by the men, not by the women, so the same diuk applies, or that the reason of Ashalokin Mu'ed Lechem B'mayim is applicable to Moav and to Amon, even though it's really said about Amon. And we do find psukim that indicate that Moav did bring them some Lechem U'B'mayim. It was only a small part of the population. The majority of the population did like Amon. Or just because the Torah puts them together, it's telling you that the din is the same, even though the diyuk might only be true, the Gabi Amon. We say the same thing by Moav by the fact that the Torah grouped them into a single unit. And we're going to stop here, 19 lines down on the top of Ayin Zayin Amud Aleph.